The Oracle and the Sea Urchin. Lou. Clad in a gown of marigold chiffon with floral appliqué, each rose dark and glittering as gunpowder, I followed Eglantine through a labyrinth of passages that night. Coco walked beside me, her own gown of ivory satin, slimmer in skirt than my own, with a fitted bodice and golden thread spun into delicate filigree, trailed behind us for miles. The dress of a true princesse. Celie glided forward on her other side, regal and elegant and completely in her element. The soft petal pink of her bodice brought color to her porcelain cheeks, and the crawling juniper vines adorning the skirt flattered her slender form. We caught quite the striking figure, the three of us. More than one head turned as we passed. Even Beau did a double take as he stepped from his cabin, eyes flitting from the pearl headpiece in Coco's hair to the emerald earring in Celie's ear, the matching ribbon on her wrist.
Lord help us all.
Beau shook his head and stepped behind us, plunging his hands into the pockets of his velvet pants. He whistled low.
Though heaven never created such a view.
We know.
Coco arched a brow over her shoulder, each step revealing a bit of smooth thigh through the slit in her skirt. Like the rest of the ship, the hall boasted extravagance with its once gilded panels and glittering, albeit broken, chandeliers. Unlike our cabins, however, this room rose high above us, the painted ceilings towering unnaturally tall for a sea vessel. The air here smelled not of mildew, but of magic, sweet and pleasant and sharp. A golden banquet table ran the length of the enormous room, and atop it, dishes and platters of a strange variety covered every inch. At the door, a liveried Melusin bowed deeply and nearly sent his wig tumbling to the floor.
Bonjour, mesdemoiselles.
He straightened with the cool hauteur of an aristocrat. On one powdered cheek, he'd drawn a tiny black heart.
Please, allow me to escort you to your seats.
Eglantine winked at us before retreating from the room. We followed the butler in a single-file line until we reached the head of the table, where a veritable throne of seashells and pearls sat empty, along with two seats on either side. The butler seated Coco and Celie together with practiced efficiency before turning to me. He ignored Beau altogether. With another low bow, he murmured,
"The Oracle will join us shortly. She kindly asks for you to sample the salted sea lettuce."
He paused to sniff through his long nose.
"It is her very favorite.
Remember."
Celie spoke in a low voice, keeping her expression pleasant as the butler stalked back to his post.
"To mind your manners."
She smiled at the aristocrats down the table. They watched us openly, some returning her smile, others whispering behind painted fans.
"We would not want to disrespect our host."
Elvira appeared without warning at her shoulder. No longer naked, she wore a dress fashioned from faded sails, complete with a belt of rope and a tiara of emeralds. The latter matched Celie's earring. I suspected it wasn't a coincidence. Touching it reverentially, Elvira inclined her head.
"Bonjour, Mademoiselle Celie. Your gown is exquisite."
Behind her, Leopoldine and La Simone leaned forward with comical interest to hang on Celie's every word. Without preamble, the Melusine sitting beside Celie rose politely and offered their seats to the guards, who accepted with equal courtesy. It was all very civil, almost saccharine.
"You must try the sargassum,"
La Simone insisted, spooning the yellowish leaves onto Celie's plate and drizzling green sauce over them.
"It is the Oracle's favorite dish."
I eyed her plate suspiciously, feeling very much like I'd failed to prepare for a schoolroom test.
"I thought the salted sea lettuce was her favorite."
He blinked at me before returning to Leopoldine, who nodded gravely.
"It is true. Sargassum was her favorite dish yesterday."
Oh, God.
"Dear me."
La Simone lifted a horrified hand to his chest before bowing deeply over Celie's plate of sargassum.
"My apologies, mademoiselle. Of course you must sample the salted sea lettuce instead. Good gracious. The Oracle would not have forgotten such a slight."
Beau and I exchanged wide-eyed glances. Without another word, I heaped salted sea lettuce onto first my plate, then Beau's.
"To the right of the dinner fork,"
he muttered discreetly as I studied the mismatched cutlery on either side of my plate. I speared a leaf with the tiny fork, but before I could lift it to my mouth, Beau stopped me with a curt shake of his head.
"Caught it first. Are you raised in a barn?"
Heat licked at my cheeks as I returned the leaf to my plate, searching for the proper knife. Elvire sipped at the effervescent liquid in her flute as Celie cut her own lettuce into exemplary pieces.
"Yes," the former said. "The Oracle positively banished Guillaumette for the gaffe last week."
"An insipid woman," Leopoldine added conspiratorially.
"I never cared for her."
Elvire fixed her with a cool stare, lifting a silver brow.
"Verily? Is she not the godmother of your daughter?"
Leopoldine abruptly busied herself with her own drink, unable to answer.
"Where is Angelica?"
I focused on cutting my sea lettuce into perfect squares, lest Elvire or Leopoldine or the octopi in the street take offense and feed me to the giant squid.
"Will she be joining us?"
La Simone stared at me as if I were the giant squid.
"Of course she is."
Though clearly vexed that I'd spoken at all, he didn't hesitate to pour me a flute of the effervescent liquid. So polite. So fascinating. If I spilled my plate in his lap, would he thank me?
"She is the most treasured of the Oracle's companions. I dare say she will arrive with our lady herself."
I bit my tongue before I could ask when that would be, then ran it over my teeth to check for bits of sea lettuce, just in case. Apparently tardiness wasn't as heinous a gaffe as forgetting her ladyship's favorite food. Lifting the flute to my lips instead, I simply nodded, then choked. It was seawater. With a forced smile, Beau patted my back as I spluttered, pressing his foot atop my own under the table.
"There, there."
He handed me a folded napkin before saying to the others,
"Please pardon my dear sister. She must have a sensitive gag reflex."
I snorted again, unable to help myself, and kicked Beau's foot from mine. Two more liveried Melusines stepped into the banquet hall then, each holding an enormous conch shell. As one, they lifted the shells to their lips and blew. The call reverberated through the chamber, rattling china and chandeliers, as the Melusine around us swept to their feet. The Oracle followed a moment later. I could only stare at her. Quite simply, she was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. Her hair rippled like water down her shoulders as she floated into the room, casting her ethereal silver gaze in our direction. When her eyes met mine, I saw not iris and sclera, but tranquil moonlight on the sea, silken foam along the shore. I saw cresting waves and flashing scales, primordial creatures of teeth and shadow who awoke with the darkness. I saw tempests tear apart kingdoms, secrets bared and secrets kept, secrets drowned in boundless depths. Then she smiled at me, and a shiver skittered down my spine. In that smile, I saw chaos. Pure, unadulterated chaos. Angelica walked behind her, head bowed and hands clasped. She caught Coco's eyes as they approached, winking covertly before resuming her pious stance. The Oracle looked only at me. I straightened as furtively as I could, painfully aware of my damp palms, but otherwise I didn't cower. Claude had once described himself as the Wild, and in his true form, I'd believed it. The Oracle didn't need to assume her true form for me to understand. From the misty, nameless color of her hair and skin to the liquid movement of her body, she was the sea, and the sea drowned those who couldn't swim.
"Je vous vois, Louise."
To my great surprise, her voice held a calming, tranquil note, like still waters at dawn.
"Bienvenue to the Crystal Palace. I have long awaited your arrival."
I curtsied with the others.
"I'm happy to be here. Thank you for interfering at the beach."
Her silver eyes, so like Angelica's, yet so different, sparkled with amusement.
"Ah, the beach. We shall speak at length about that happy coincidence later. First, we must dine."
She nodded to another liveried Melusine, who hastened to pull back her chair. Her gown, crafted entirely from long, gleaming strands of pearls, clinked softly as she sat. The rest of the court seated themselves with her. When she snapped her fingers, the aristocrat on Coco's right vaulted to her feet without a word, ceding her seat to Angelica.
"You have sampled the salted sea lettuce, yes?"
"Yes, my lady."
I too returned to my seat, wiping my palms and my thighs beneath the table.
"It was..."
The waters prevented me from lying. I tried again.
"A special experience."
"Come now." Her smile broadened, and unbidden, the image of a hungry shark rose in my mind's eye. I clenched my skirt between two fists, mentally chastising myself. There is no need for clever language amongst friends. How did you find it, truly? I'm glad to have tasted it. Glad. She said the word slowly, curiously. There are uglier designations, I suppose. I am glad you found it. What clever word did you use? She tapped her lips. Special. Now, she snapped her fingers again. Clear it away, I tire of its stench. The servants bustled to remove every plate of salted sea lettuce from the table. S'il vous plaît, she continued before they'd finished. I crave heavier fare tonight. Bring the neige marine for our special guests. Perhaps not so calming at all. My palms continued to sweat. We sat in distinctly uncomfortable silence as more dishes were passed down the table. Isla didn't seem to notice. She merely continued to smile as servants spooned small amounts of gray, sticky substance onto each plate. When she lifted a bite to her lips, she paused, appraising the room to ensure she held everyone's attention. She did, of course. Every Melusine's face turned toward her as if she were their very sun. She waved an elegant hand with a laugh. Eat, mes enfants, and be merry! Her children obliged, and the gentle sounds of clinking cutlery and soft voices soon filled the silence. Elvire, Leopoldine, and La Simone immediately engaged in conversation with Celie, and Angelica with a resigned Coco, leaving Beau and me to suffer the weight of Isla's stare alone. Tell me, she crooned, leaning across him to grasp my clammy hand. He stiffened, but didn't complain. What were your last words to read? I looked up from my neige marine in surprise. Pardon me? The last words you spoke to your lover, what were they? Glancing at Beau, I frowned. I don't remember. Her smile turned positively wicked. Try. Feeling increasingly unsettled, I concentrated on recalling the memory, exhaling hard as the threads of our conversation returned. I said, either I kill my mother or my mother kills me. It's the only way. That smile, those eyes, not tranquil water at all, but the calm in the eye of a hurricane. Perhaps the hurricane itself. Inexplicably, I knew the pleasantries had ended. She released my hand and returned to her seat, dabbing her mouth with a napkin. Is that so? I wouldn't have been able to say it otherwise. Beau pressed his foot over mine again. And do you remember his last words to you? She asked slyly. These words I didn't struggle to remember. He promised he would find me. Find you? When she batted her lashes as if goading me, unease lifted the hair at my neck. Surely this wasn't appropriate table conversation. We'd only just met, and Melusine valued etiquette. My suspicion only deepened when she asked, He sleeps below decks, does he not? He does. I forced my voice to remain calm and collected, pleasant even. Still, I couldn't help but search her features for some of her brother's warmth, his good humor. I've tried to wake him to no avail. Actually, I cleared my throat as delicately as possible, throwing caution to the wind. I was hoping you might speed along the process. Inexplicable triumph flashed in those nameless eyes. Oh? Though her voice remained light, conversational, her words belied the tone. You hope, or you presume? My brows furrowed at the word. I would never presume. No. Idly, she lifted a hand, and a servant hurried to fill her flute. Do my mirrors lie, Lourcin? Do you not secretly scheme for an alliance? Incredulous, I met Coco's eyes across the table. She didn't intervene, however. She didn't dare interrupt. I don't scheme for anything, my lady. While I would have liked to secure your friendship during our visit, I don't expect it. Would have? Does this mean you no longer desire my friendship? No, my lady. I mean, yes. It's just... I splayed my hands helplessly. This doesn't seem to be going terribly well.
What do you expect, Louise, when you treat gods and goddesses as your personal attendants?
She sipped at her seawater, still studying me.
To be frank, I cannot fathom what my siblings see in you, nor why they indulge your arrogance. When I sent Angelica to fetch you, I expected some sort of grandeur, a magnetism, perhaps. But now, having met you, I see you possess neither. Aurore has bestowed her blessing on a sea urchin.
The first spark of anger lit in my chest. Aurore's blessing? A sea urchin?
Is that why you invited me here? To satisfy your curiosity?
She didn't answer, instead turning to Beau.
What about you, princeling? Do you find Louise intelligent?
He carefully returned his spoon to his plate before answering.
I do.
Do you find her extraordinarily intelligent?
His
reply caught in his throat, however, and his gaze cut to mine, abruptly panicked, rueful. My anger spiked in response. He couldn't lie. Not here. Not caught in Isla's web of magic, even to spare my feelings. The knowledge hurt, but it didn't cut deep enough to scar. I might not have been extraordinarily intelligent, but I had intelligence enough to know Isla wanted to hurt me, to shock and awe me. I just didn't understand why.
As I thought. Tell me, princeling, do you find her extraordinarily beautiful, then?
He frowned, eyes still darting between us. Her gaze, however, still didn't stray from mine. It bored into me with disturbing intensity, with disturbing clarity. Beau tugged at the collar of his shirt before muttering,
"Of course I find her pretty. She's my..."
His throat worked again, failing to form the words.
"She's like my sister."
"How quaint. I asked if you find her beauty extraordinary, however. Is Louise among the fairest you've encountered?"
When he didn't answer right away, she inclined her head.
"Just so. Do you consider her extraordinarily brave instead?"
Again, he didn't answer.
"No. Extraordinarily true, perhaps. Extraordinarily just."
Still, Beau said nothing, swallowing hard around words that couldn't come. Sweat beaded along his forehead at the effort. His foot pressed against mine with enough force to crack my bones. A peculiar hum started in my ears at the pressure, and my vision tunneled on Isla's superior expression. How dare she treat us this way? We were guests in her realm. She'd invited us here. And for what? To torment us? To poke and prod until we snapped? An almost childlike indignation flooded my system at the injustice. Isla was supposed to be an ally.
"I don't. Why do you ask such questions?" Beau ground out.
She ignored his struggle, continuing ruthlessly.
"Is Louise a leader, Beauregard? A visionary?"
"She... not as such."
"Has she offered you riches in exchange for your loyalty? Has she offered you magic?"
He nearly choked on his answer.
"Is she extraordinary in any way?"
"She..."
He looked to me, helpless, color rising in his cheeks. Across the table, Celie shot us covert looks, still pretending to listen to Elvira. Coco didn't pretend at all. She glared at Isla with eyes that blazed with hatred, while the hum in my ears grew louder.
"Is just as I feared," Isla finished for him. "She is ordinary. Painfully, intolerably ordinary, yet she inspires the loyalty and devotion of my sister, my brother, you."
Scoffing, she shook her head and signaled for another course.
"A wasted blessing, to be sure."
"I am not blessed."
"You don't even realize, do you? I shouldn't be surprised. Aurore may say what she likes about Morgan, but at least your mother possesses a modicum of awareness."
My fingers shook at the comparison. At the insult. I curled them into fists, staring at the pan-fried dulse without seeing it.
"Why did you summon us here?"
Again, she ignored my question, reaching across Beau to seize the diamond pin in my hair.
"Help me understand, Louise. Why do they follow where you lead? I have only ever watched you fail, watched you murder, watched you lie, watched you cheat. Indeed, like a sea urchin, the only feat you've managed in all your life is survival.
In doing so, you have harmed every person in this beloved family of yours, yet each one remains. Why? Perhaps it's my extraordinary sense of humor. The words fell heavy from my lips, hard. Heat rippled from my chest through my limbs now, and my entire body trembled. White edged my vision. Ordinary. She'd said it as an expletive, something basic and coarse, something inferior. No. With an errant flick of her wrist, my diamond pin clattered to the floor. Vaguely, I realized the table had stilled around us. Every eye had turned in my direction. I do not think so. Even with Aurore's blessing, even with your precious allies, you are not equipped to win this war, Louise Leblanc. Quite simply, my sister chose wrong. That heat kept spreading, hotter than anger now, hotter than embarrassment. Brows furrowing in alarm, Beau stared at my hand when I slammed it atop the table. You speak of blessings, I said, the words spilling forth wildly and with abandon. But what good are the loyalty and devotion of the wild man of the forest and the triple goddess? My mother, my own mother, the person who should have loved me most in the world, has tried to kill me 3 times. She murdered my best friend in front of me. Since then, I've spent days, perhaps weeks, possessed by Nicolina. Earlier tonight, she almost drowned me in these wretched waters, where my mother also tried to kill me, again. Now Reed sleeps under an enchantment I cannot break, while you insult me in front of your entire court. My chest heaved. If this is the blessing of a goddess, I'd hate to see her curse. Isla only smiled. With a single finger, she pushed the dish between us, still covered, in my direction. The flippant gesture only enraged me further. I shoved to my feet, prepared to stalk from the hall, to seize Reed's body and leave. When my eyes dropped to the silver cloche, to my reflection there. Too late, I registered the sharp scent of magic. Coco's eyes held wonder, fear, as she too pushed from the table. Lou? But I didn't recognize my reflection. Round, brown eyes stared back at me, and straight, wheat-colored locks replaced my own. Pink cheeks replaced freckles. My gown hung from diminutive shoulders, the excess fabric pooling at my feet. As I stared at it, the heat in my chest morphed slowly to something else. Something innocent, youthful, inquisitive, alive. Without realizing, I transformed into the maiden. When Isla stood to stroll toward me, her entire court stood too. She trailed a casual finger across my throat, scarless now. You were saying? I swallowed hard against her nail, refusing to look at anyone, especially my reflection. How is this possible? Claude warned Morgane. He told her what would happen if she continued to defy us. Morgane arranged your possession regardless.
But that...
Beau pushed his plate away with a slack expression.
That means...
Yes, princeling. Isla moved behind me, fanning my hair across my shoulders. The sea urchin has become la dame des sorcières. A pity, if you ask me, but admittedly a useful one. Does Morgane know? Coco asked sharply. In answer, Angelica tensed, her eyes eddying until she no longer saw the room, but something else. Somewhere else. Yes. She returned to us after another moment, shaking her head and wincing. She is not pleased. I spoke through numb lips.
Why did you bring us here?
Her hands tightened on my neck, and at last, she answered. My darling Angelica believes we should ally ourselves with you in this tedious struggle against Morgane. I felt her shrug, as if we'd discussed the weather and not my very life. I must confess I care not for it. Neither your death nor your mother's will affect us here. She moved beside me then, offering a hand. I had no choice but to accept it. Tucking my arm in hers, she led me about the room, while the others tracked us with their eyes. No one dared resume eating. I am not, however, a fool. I didn't correct her. You present a unique opportunity for me and my people, and most of all for Angelica. I treasure her, you know, she added. The woman in question kept her head bowed and her hands clasped, as all the Melusine did. 20 years ago, a ring of hers was stolen while she dallied above water, creating your rather beautiful friend.
Isla waved a vague hand toward Coco.
You have heard of this ring. You have called it by name.
Reaching around me, she lifted my right hand to stroke my empty ring finger.
You have even wielded its magic. You do not, however, know it as we do. It is not a simple ring of immunity and invisibility, as your foolish kin believe. More importantly, it does not belong to them. It does not belong to any of you. It is Angelica's ring. It is her very power, and we shall have it back.
Vindicated, I almost laughed at the realization, at the hard, delicious truth. For all her extraordinary intelligence, beauty, and bravery, here she was, in need of me, a sea urchin.
If you know I've used it, you also know I don't have it any longer. My mother does. It's kept under lock and key at Chateau Leblanc.
Precisely. I don't quite grasp what you're implying. Ordinary brain, you know. If her ring is so important, surely you can retrieve it yourself. When she turned me to face her abruptly, her smile shone hard and bright, and her nails dug painfully into my forearm, longer and sharper than before. She lifted a finger to my lips when I tried to protest, and the metallic taste of blood followed. My blood. Her eyes dipped to my lips, to her finger, before flicking back to my own.
Do not disrespect me, or you shall never hear my proposition.
I glared at her in mutinous silence. She arched a devilish brow.
I cannot retrieve the ring myself, because I cannot directly intervene. My Melusine cannot do it for me, because they cannot leave the waters without it. Do you understand now, mon Poufias? It is, as you say, a mutually beneficial arrangement.
Her words rang in my ears as the rest of her fingers curled around my face, squeezing my cheeks hard enough to bruise.
Tomorrow you shall return to the surface, and you shall steal back Angelica's ring from your mother. Then, and only then, will my people join you against her.